Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This Thursday night game crap is for the birds. I got to tell you that right now. Everything in my entire world is set sideways. I cleaned up the computer today, and I managed to delete the intro and the outro. So I will have to get those added after the fact. So apologies to Franco for the anthem and the intro and the outro. In an attempt to clear up disk space, because this show may go on for about 6 days, I wanted to get everything off that I could. So if you're in the chat room right now, you heard the raw, I know, Pinnacle, you missed the bumper, man. I'm sorry. I'll get it fixed up. Don't worry. Franco's got my back. We'll get it taken care of. We've got a lot planned for tonight. I want to first and foremost welcome our guests in studio once again. You guys have gotten used to their voices here. You've known their voices for years. We've got right across from me the editor-in-chief of PewterReport.com, the one, the only ginger badass, Mark Cook. Mark, welcome to the show tonight.
Hello, hello.
To my right, the viewers left. I don't know why people do that. I always wanted to do it, though. And there's no viewers, so it makes even less sense. I've got my man Chris Fisher of the podcast formerly known as Bucks Brief, now of BYOCB, who will now get to say hello without being interrupted.
Yeah, this is my mic check now. Thank you.
This is your mic check. There you go. That's how professional we are.
Hey, I got a question.
Imagine that.
Just kidding.
All right. So tonight's show actually will be a two-parter. And it's a two-parter for a couple of reasons, guys. I want to set the stage here for you guys who are early. And I know that we're going to lose some viewers, listeners, whatever you want to call you guys, to this little thing called the World Series Game 7.
Including myself.
Yeah, because he's watching it on his MacBook. It's the only thing Max can actually do is watch TV.
Ouch. Ask Chuck how he feels about the new iOS.
The new iPod? New iPhone that's exactly the same as the last seven iterations? It's fast.
But it doesn't blow up, apparently.
No,
apparently it doesn't explode yet.
Yet, exactly. So the first show is going to be our more traditional, for this season anyway, show. We're going to talk about the Raiders game. I went back and rewatched the coach's film. Which you guys all could do, and I also want to drop a couple of plugs here, not for any of our sponsors, which I'll do in a minute, but I do want to make sure that you people that listen to this podcast, all 3,000, 4,000, whatever you are, you have the ability for, I think, what is it, like $80 if you had to buy the season, if you're not a season ticket, I think it's like $79 now.
Yeah, they'll give it to you for $79.99 now, I think.
You could even watch the entire game whenever you chose, as often as you like, to validate your wild-ass cockamamie ideas. You could do this, and this is going to come into play in show two.
I was going to say, are we already starting show two?
No, but the tinge is going to be there, Mark, because the anger is real in the Empire right now.
Understandable.
So, I went back and watched the coach's film, and we're going to talk about that Raiders game. We're also going to talk a little bit about the Atlanta game, because Atlanta, once again, become the darling. Matt Ryan, I think, has already thrown for 200 yards in the Thursday night game, and it hasn't even started.
Yes.
So, we'll talk about that. We're going to get your feedback as well. We'll talk about all of those things and what this loss against the Raiders means for our Buccaneers. Then, at the end of the first hour, and we are going to cut it as close to that first hour as we can, we're going to start another show. It will drop. We'll start a new show. You guys can hop right back in the chat room. This will allow our more mature, more formal, more legitimate media friends at Pewter Report to choose or not choose to air the second show, which I totally respect. I love that Pewter Report has partnered with us and done this for us. But I don't want to put them in a bad spot either. It's one of the reasons why we went away from some of the language we've been using for the better part of a decade that somehow became innovation in the podcast universe recently. We are going to have a no-holds-barred hour of Bucks to contact. The phone lines will be open the entire time in that second show. Write it down now, 813-964-7364. You guys can participate. Bring all of your crap. We'll talk about all of it. We'll cover as many of the what we believe to be myths, some real positions, et cetera, in that second show. So there's the stage. Let me thank our sponsors because we had, despite losing the game, guys, the Raiders fans, and I know there's a lot of talk about the Raiders fans, we had about 400 of them come to our tailgate. They were amazing. We had an amazing tailgate. We generated over $1,800 towards making strides for breast cancer. It was phenomenal. The only thing that could have made the day better is a Bucks victory, which we didn't get. Big shout out to Bill Curry Ford, Christy and the team over there saved our bacon with their grill and everything else. They're our platinum sponsor, Steakhouse Elite. We want to thank those guys for the Kobe Crafted Beef, Tito's Vodka, who just came through with some more hooch for us, which we're really excited about. Our friends at Pepin Distributing as well for the Bud Light and Budweiser and swag that we've got, as well as some of our great banners. And, of course, Coca-Cola. We are tailgating Thursday night. Nothing changes for us except for I'm apparently an idiot and screw shit up. When Thursday night games happen, we'll be out there at 4 o'clock. And by that, I mean we'll probably be out there at about 1 o'clock, but the tailgate will open at 4. The charity of this month is Movember. The guys in the studio can attribute or can attest to the fact that I have my ridiculous trucker mustache rocking. I cheated the system a little bit this year. You normally shave entirely and grow from the beginning. I've done that now for this is my eighth year. I'm going to start with this, and I want to see how thick I can get it.
That's good, because normally it's Christmas before we can even notice any facial hair.
That is
that's
so
good.
Not true, man.
Yeah,
every
you're
time,
a slow grower.
That's funny.
And given, you're not a shower.
Given my man for this 4 o'clock shadow that he rocks his entire life.
I trim it every day.
I bet you do. You and Brad Pitt with your one guard. At any rate, Movember this month, and all of our proceeds are going to go to that. So if you haven't seen that, please take a look. Now, with that being said, I am going to – don't shave until we win a home game. All right, here's the thing. I like that, Vegas Buck fan, but you're going to start dropping some edicts, some challenges, some ideas. I will not shave my mustache until we win a home game. How's that? I won't. But for every week that we don't win a home game, you guys have to generate $100 towards Movember. I don't care how you do it, Vegas. It's on you. It's a great idea. Should you accept this challenge, you drop the gauntlet, you let me know if you can get together with the other Buck fans. If you can generate $100 for every week until we win a home game, I will not shave this ludicrous, and it is ludicrous, guys,
it
mustache.
Is.
So you guys speak amongst yourselves in the chat room. I'm going to pass the mic over to Mark Cook because he's going to give us an update from One Buck Place. The infirmary there must be ridiculous. It must look like a MASH unit from the 70s. What's going on over at One Buck Place? Do we have a running back anymore? Who's going to actually play receiver? It's crazy what's going on. I know all teams deal with injuries, but it does seem like it's been a little bit crazy for us.
You know, the list isn't huge, but the list is key. I mean, there's key players missing that's going to be out. You know, the injury report's up on Pewter Report, but I will save you the effort of clicking on Pewter Report, although you have to promise to do it later, everyone listening.
Absolutely. All listeners click on PewterReport.com and all of Mark's articles specifically.
Golson practiced fully today. Again, it was basically a walkthrough. We weren't allowed. Media wasn't available today. He's listed as questionable. Doug Martin out. Jacquez Rogers out. Again, Clint McDonald out. And Russell Shepherd is doubtful. So virtually or essentially he's out as well. Good news, if you want to say there's good news, the Falcons are going to be without Tevin Coleman. He's going to be out. Dwight Freeney's out. And their starting tight end, Jacob Tammy, is out. So that helps.
The Buck killer.
Yes, the Buck killer.
And Tevin
virtually
Coleman.
Virtually every tight end that's ever played the Buccaneers that wore the Falcons uniform has been tough.
Tevin Coleman, not to be confused with Tevin Campbell.
I was going to do that. I should have said Tevin Campbell. But anyway, I didn't.
Austin Hooper is his
show your sensitivity. Oh, he drops a song reference, too. Look at the skills over
wow.
here.
Wow.
Wow.
You're into like really bad 90s music, so I give
There's
you props.
No such thing as really bad 90s music.
All of it.
You're
every bit
terrible.
Of it.
Terrible. All right, so the infirmary's bad. Of course, some of the things on top of Bucks fans' minds, and I know that you're not a doctor, Mark, though sometimes you have played doctor, I assume.
Mm-hmm. We will after the show.
Hey, don't tease now.
Every week he tries to get me over here, Chris, by either a pool party or playing doctor, and yet to do any of these things.
I have to keep you guessing. I really do. There's
Such
a lot
tease.
Of concern about Doug Martin. Because everyone who's a football fan becomes a doctor when they get injured. Mm-hmm. Any news about what's going on with Doug? It was a hamstring injury, soft tissue. Those are always hard to come back from. What's the scoop?
The guy is invisible. He's almost like J.R. Sweezy. Actually, we saw Sweezy up in the press box on Sunday, so we know he is alive.
Was he eating the chicken marsala?
Yes. He was not. He has not passed away. J.R. Sweezy is still on the team at some point. We just
Unless he can
him.
Be running back, I don't really care anymore.
Yeah, well, that's the way I feel about it. As far as Doug goes, we saw yesterday, I guess it was, Jacquez in a boot. Not the ankle sprain boot, more of the foot boot, the plastic hard shell type boot that goes from the ankle down. I tried to talk to Jacquez, and of course, you know, injured players are off limits. Of course, he
sure.
shouldn't have been in open locker room, because technically if you're in open locker room, you're not off limits, but whatever. We respect the Buccaneers' wishes, and anyway, he said, I can't really talk. But he's definitely out, and that's too bad, because this guy was finally getting an opportunity, and you hate to see that. And he wasn't one of these guys getting an opportunity, and you're like, gosh, I can't wait for Doug Martin to get back. I certainly want Doug Martin to get back, but it wasn't like he was a slouch. I mean, he had 100-yard games, and was had a decent game last week as well before the injury. But when I saw Doug, when I saw Jacquez in the boot, I asked a member of the organization, I was like, wow, any chance Doug is back this week? And he literally looked at me and gave me the double take and looked like I had three eyes coming out of my forehead. Like, are you crazy? Hell no, he's not going to be back. Which made me think, because I'm thinking it's week to week at this point. But
it should be from a physical perspective, it should be at this point if it was just a hamstring.
Well,
but if he's not practicing, then even,
right.
you know, that's the big deal there, right? That's like Mike James coming back, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mike James knows the offense. He's a talented player. We've seen what he can do. But he hasn't been here forever, right? I don't know what he's been doing when he hasn't been here. So he's going to come back in. And they're like, hey, Hop in the lineup. Let's go.
Well, and you know what? That's good for Mike, but you're right. I mean, he's not Jacquez Rogers, and he's not Doug Martin, and he's not Charles Sims. I don't even know if he's Antoine Smith or Peyton Barber. We'll find out. But it's going to be running back by committee. I would guess that Smith gets the start. Barber, number two. James gets worked in there at some point, just depending on, you know, how speedy he is. He was on the Lions practice squad. So, you know, it's not like
he should be in shape.
Yeah.
He hasn't been eating Cheetos with Roy Miller. By the way, Roy, get well.
Exactly.
I like Roy a lot, and I hate that he got injured over there.
Yeah.
He stayed a friend of the program even after he left. He's a hell of a good guy. So,
one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet, certainly.
So, Skip Brown says, our running back stable is horrific. Let's put a pin in that one to talk about how dumb that comment was in hour two, if you stay around, Skip. Because when you go through the injuries we've already gone through and you're talking about your fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh running backs, and that's your running back stable is horrific, I'd love you to go to another roster and find someone whose four, five, six, and seven running backs are worth a shit.
Yeah, that's practice squad. I mean, that's
let's just make sure we level set, because Skip's a really bright guy, a great fan. I love him to death as a human being, but that's exactly the kind of crap that I'm talking about that we're going to really tear the back end out of in hour two. Okay? So let's go on. As my blood pressure returns, continue, Mark, with your wonderful exposition on what's going on at $1.
You said about Doug too, because the fact that he was potentially coming back, and well, when I know you're never going to hear anything about injuries, but it was a re-injury to or a re-aggravated or whatever it was. So we don't know
setback,
setback, whatever it was. You don't know what happened. It could have been, you know, something else that happened. They're never going to tell you.
Well, and I will say this: Dirk, you're right. Doesn't give out very much information. He did tell us. On the Lewis Murphy thing, that it was not his knee again. So I'm suspecting, because he didn't clarify when he just said setback, that it wasn't another body part. I'm guessing that it was, in fact, that hamstring. Now, again, this is the brilliant reporting you get from Pewter Report. I saw a picture on Twitter of Doug at Hallow Scream at Busch Gardens last week. So, again, he also is alive. We know that, but that's all we know. And listen, he wasn't in a wheelchair. That's a good thing. His leg had not been amputated, so, you know, he didn't get it chopped off or anything. He didn't, you know, get it blown off or anything. So the setback, I'm guessing, is, again, more of the same with the hamstring. And, you know, and so I would guess from whatever that point that Dirk said the setback occurred, I'm guessing that means starting over at ground zero from the initial hamstring diagnosis in week two. So, you know, another 4 or 5 weeks possibly. The thing is, they're obviously assuming that he's going to come back, or they would have placed him on injured reserve. Can I say that I saw Vincent Jackson this week in open locker room? Talk to him. Off the record,
how's
nothing
Vincent
major.
Doing?
Fine. Apparently not going to need any surgery on that ACL.
I'm sorry, what did you just say?
I don't know that he's going to need surgery on the ACL.
That put him on IR.
That put him on IR. So,
I'll leave that out there.
You know, I don't know what that means. He certainly had some damage to the ACL. And again, we all know there's different severities and things like that.
Absolutely.
It was enough that you know, he and the organization didn't feel it would be best for him to continue to play this season. And I think we've seen, you know, just based on salary-wise and production earlier in the year, it may be the end for Vincent. But again, still love the guy. In fact, he asked me about, you know, one of our football coaches out at Pinecrest who has colon cancer that's been going through treatment. I got them introduced back during training camp. They spent a lot of time together, both military guys, and they traded captain's coins. I'm not really sure what that is, but apparently that's something pretty significant military-wise. And he asked how Coach's team was doing, and I told him they were undefeated and going to the playoffs, and he said, you know, wish him good luck. Just a good quality human being, no question about it. And I was the first, and listen, not the first. I was one of many who bashed Vincent Jackson's production, question if his heart was still in it, all of those things. Boy, I would take a 50% Vincent Jackson going into this game right now, as opposed to what potentially is going to be there when you're talking about Cecil Shorts and Freddie Martino.
Well, and what's funny is, you know, I don't disagree. I wasn't particularly happy with Vincent this year either. And we had conversations on this show because he's not a guy who doesn't show heart. That's not his thing. So there was some really perplexed looks on our side of the table as to what was going on. The reality is he's not available, so it doesn't matter. And the speculation is all anyone is doing right now, which is complete waste of time. Why Cecil Shorts can't do anything, maybe because he's just not very good, which is why he was cut from his previous team.
And let's face it,
he's
too
short. And he also just came into this squad. He's not got any chemistry with Jameis. Jameis himself has not been particularly good as of late, though not as bad, I think, as some people are making out, especially when I went back on second watch. But you had a 620 bit where you talked about his fourth quarter performance. I'm sure there's some good data there that we can pull from in this conversation.
Again, you totally missed my joke that he's too short.
I heard the short part. It was just funny. Too obvious.
In the third, too. So he's like literally three times too short, apparently.
Well, there you go.
It's weird they did that this year on all these NFL players.
Everybody's doing it now.
Now
I'm Mark Cook. I would be Mark Cook 1 if I had a jersey, which I don't.
I'm Mark Cook.
Yeah. Mark Cook, uno.
Uno. So I've got a pin in it, Skip. Don't worry. I'm not going to let it get away from what you just discussed. I know you didn't like Charles Sims, and that's the root of your issue with the running back thing. So we will definitely – I wrote it down on our notes for the second hour.
I think he may be more angry that was it. You know, they went into the season with Doug Martin, who tends to have some injury issues, or didn't last year, but, you know, banged up some. And that was it. And then expecting that Charles Sims could be that featured back. Because remember, Jacquez Rodgers, who came in and kind of saved the day in those two wins, wasn't even on the roster when they played Atlanta.
Right,
the
they
first
went up
time.
With a primary and a secondary back that they had success with the year before, who are the leading tandem in the NFL, and various pieces of data,
that.
Whether people like them or don't like them, or stylistically don't agree with them, or think their haircuts are bad. They were a productive tandem. The concept of injury issues is one that I always bristle at, because injuries simply happen. You don't have a guy who just has injuries, other than maybe Chris Chandler, who's made of tissue paper, right? Or Chrissy Everett, as my man called him before he got punched in the mouth. But the narrative that we will also put a pin in is the concept that Doug's not getting back on the field because it's not a contract year. He got his money. He doesn't care. So realize, you guys in the chat room, another pin is in this concept that I think some of you have, that these guys out there don't want to play.
Yeah,
they
want
to play enough
bit.
To get their contract and then not play. The last guy I'd ever heard of that seemed to be like that was Albert Haynesworth, who many of you wanted us to sign.
Including me.
Tell me that's not true, Mark.
Well, initially, when he ended up going to
the
free agent.
First time or the second time?
No, not when he came here. But I'm talking about, I thought he was the top free agent on the market. There's no doubt about it. He was a game-changing defensive lineman. And he was an example of what fans get frustrated about, or what they assume that...
Someone wants to talk already.
Man.
No, we're not taking calls in the first hour, guys. We'll take calls in the second hour.
But,
it's a 715 number. I'm not sure it was. If you just called in, it's going to be in the second. It's in the second hour.
But no, I listen. I love Skip too. He's a frustrated, angry fan right now, as you are, Derek.
He is.
As
but he
fans
thanked
are.
You for your soliloquy and didn't thank me for the fact that I pointed out all the holes in the story. Not your story, but in the narrative, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's cool. And I appreciate. You know how much respect I have for Skip, and we can disagree, and that's totally fine. Mm-hmm. Like, I totally get that, and that's awesome. But you can't just pick and choose data, right? That's just not logical. Now, you can just say, hey, I'm just going to be emotional about it. Don't worry about logic. I'm just being emotional. We all get that way. Shit, I get that way. Mark, you do too. But once you've had 24 hours, 48 hours, 72 hours to calm down, and you go back and look at it, that's like, again, and I hate that we keep pulling stuff in the second hour in, but I'm trying to make sure the language stays clean so you can still post it. But the narrative around McCoy, I went back and told him, it's just not true.
No.
It's just not true.
No.
Just because you say it, or just because people on Twitter say it, or just because there's four podcasts that said it, or just because you heard it on a radio, and it keeps getting said, the louder it gets doesn't make it any more true.
Very similar to political Facebook postings. I mean, people can post anything they want.
Those are true.
100 of them get shared, and the next thing you know, everyone's believing it, and, you know, because it was on Facebook. Look, because you read it on Twitter, it's just not true. The bottom line is Gerald McCoy is a great football player who's busting his ass out there every single opportunity he gets. You know, did he make a huge difference in that game? No. But imagine him with not being in that football game at all.
The reality is he still drew doubles, a couple of time triples. He still got to pressure. Chris, you did a great job on some of the things when you went on your tirade on individual plays, which
was angry,
which was great, I thought. And when you have a player like that, one of the things that they do is they open up opportunities for other guys. And one of the people that I'll talk about tonight, and I would really be interested to find out if you can get some data on this as well. I love Quan Alexander. I'm an unabashed fan of Quan Alexander.
Terrible
I think
game Sunday.
He had a terrible game.
Terrible.
He got 14 tackles, but he should have had about 30 tackles. He guessed wrong on his assignment.
Absolutely.
When you look at those plays that were coming down the middle, probably 8 out of 10, if there were 10, it was probably roughly 10 of them, were because Quan guessed wrong. He leapt into the wrong gap.
And I hate to say this, because this isn't Quan, and maybe it was because of, you know, the point in the game later in the game, and these guys were gassed, but you know, at times it just looked like there wasn't a whole lot of effort to get off of some of these blocks either. You know what I mean? I mean, and again, I'm not questioning the guy's integrity because he's a hell of a football player. And obviously he's working his ass off. But he was out of position multiple times, ran past the running back multiple times, shooting gaps, letting the running back go right by him. And when he did get somebody on him, he didn't. And I will say, listen, their offensive line holds all five
all
of these guys
day,
every single thing. And you know what? They're okay with that because they know eventually, believe it or not, even after 23, because there were probably three penalties after the 23rd one that should have been called.
Oh, yeah.
And eventually, like, the refs are going to stop at some point. You know, like, we can't call a hold every single player. This game goes on forever. But that's what the Raiders do, and they're willing to take that 10 yards every once in a while to get backed up. But they're going to hold every single play. And they are a highly effective offensive line. As we saw, everybody's upset. There was no pressure. We talked about this. Derek Carr been sacked 7 times coming into this game, only hit 15 times. The Buccaneers were going to have to come up with some great scheme to be able to. They weren't going to win one-on-one with those four guys very often. And come to find out, they did it twice. One was a cornerback. Jude had a sack. I don't count that. Noah Spence had one. That was it. So, you know,
that was
one,
on a double A-gap blitz. That was not straight up four. They sent both linebackers up the middle. They ran a Tom game in the middle. Mm-hmm. It was a great play. It took a risk. They tried to do a variety of it later and got stung.
Right.
Right. And then they showed it and dropped back into coverage, and Levante didn't get quite deep enough. Carr had the time. He made a great throw to...
That was the Coop
touchdown? Cooper.
Yeah.
Is that the one where Conte got hung out to dry?
Yes.
And again, I talked to Chris a little bit this week. Chris doesn't like to go on the record with the media because no matter what he says, it's going to sound like an excuse, and I understand that. And he says, you know, I'm used to it. I get beat up all the time. And he's pointed out, you know, kind of off the record, you know, there's more to it than just what it appears. Dirk alluded to that, and also Mike Smith in his press conference yesterday. You know, when other guys don't do their job, your back end guys sometimes get stuck doing something that they're not really supposed to do.
Yep.
And so they appear to be the guy that totally screwed up. I made a point in our mailbag when people were beating up Chris. And listen, Chris told me, he told me this. He says, I got to play better. I got to make more plays. I understand that. But I also said in the mailbag, I don't know that John Lynch breaks up that pass. I don't think Rondé Barber, when he was a safety, breaks up that pass. Mark Cotney doesn't break up that pass. David Greenwood doesn't break up that pass. I'm just trying to think of random Buccaneer safeties, right?
Doing a good job.
Dwight Smith.
Maybe.
He would have intercepted a running back for touchdown and won a Super Bowl because of it.
Well, if it was the game was played at San Diego, he would have. But and Gruden would have been running down the sidelines with him. But, you know, listen, that's not Chris's forte, all right? Man coverage against... Arguably, not even arguably, he's a top three receiver in the NFL, or top five at least, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
So
after what I watched him do on Sunday, and not just because he was against our defensive backfield, which people have now all thrown out, they're all terrible, burn the whole thing down, start over, go find the ghost of Rondé Barber.
But this is a case, and proof of what we've talked about, that if you don't get pressure, a good quarterback like that is going to pick you apart. It doesn't matter, and I've said this before, if you've got four, I said Darrell Revis's, but he sucks right now. So let's say four, Richard Sherman.
Is he 63 years old?
No, he's 61.
Okay.
But he can do early Social Security this year.
Oh, that's good. That's right. He can roll forward.
Right.
Right.
So, you know, the thing is I don't know what they want. I mean, at that point. Now, there were some breakdowns. There were some miscommunications.
Yeah, the wheel route was on Conte, right? Yeah. He had help on the inside. I think it was Levante. He crept up showing blitz. The back leaked out of the back. It wasn't even a wheel. It was actually just a flat route.
Right.
And Conte jumped on the inside route, and he shouldn't. He was last line of defense to the outside. He had to keep outside control, mm-hmm. and he didn't. And they chased it down and ended up making the tackle, right? So it sucked. But it's one of those things where, and we've got on cue, Conte sucks this season, right? Guys.
Let me add this too. Wasn't Chris, but another player said... Here's some breaking news for you. I say breaking news, not really breaking news, but it's a little bit of inside
scoop. It's
okay.
People
have
ruined the breaking news tag anyway.
Off the record deal. You know, somebody said, I kind of wish we just played, particularly later in that game, went to a base coverage and just played that. You know, there's a lot of audibles and checks being made, and it's very difficult against an up-tempo team like the Raiders to make that adjustment. And in fact, this person said, jokingly, I wish they would make it a rule where you at least have to be on the, you know, huddle for 15 seconds, because it is extremely difficult for defenses to, you know, again, it's another advantage offenses have over defenses. And again, when you've got two Pro Bowl caliber receivers and you've got a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback and things are clicking, you know what I mean? It is difficult. And these guys were gassed. 93 snaps, I think, the defense saw, and they don't rotate defensive backs at all. And that was a big point that was brought up. Rick Stroud brought that up to Dirk and to Mike Smith, and they both shut him down and said, we're not giving cornerbacks breathers. It doesn't happen in this defense.
They're on the field 32 minutes, I believe, from the second half into overtime. So, I mean, three and outs lead to that. But Derek mentioned something on Twitter. I think it was in regards to Winston. You take the good with the bad, right?
Yep.
I think you do that with Chris Conte, too, because I didn't go back and write down each one that he did, but how many touchdown-saving tackles did he have in that game, right?
Number and a couple in open field against pretty damn good skill guys.
And this year. Let me go back to what the defensive player said. You know, he was basically saying – you know, and again, he likes the defense. He likes, you know, the things, but it's a very complicated defense at times. And, you know, he kind of wishes that they would simplify it just a little bit. And, you know, particularly when you get in a situation where you're gassed, where it's difficult to think out there, you're tired, you know, you're making late calls, you're trying to make an adjustment as a team's getting over the ball, ready to snap it. It's not an easy thing to do. They'll get better at it. And going back to the not rotating the cornerback thing, Dirk was very testy this week. If anybody watched
the press
conferences, yeah, and even more. But he didn't beat me up this week. At least he got on to Greg Allman.
Did you finally ask him decent questions?
I didn't ask any.
Okay, good move.
Bowed out. But he
got on Greg Allman?
Oh yeah. You didn't watch the press conference yesterday,
dude? I barely know where the hell I am right now.
First of all, Mike James's jersey had been in the locker room for 2 days. No announcement from the team. He was signed. His agent said he was signed. The Buccaneers didn't say he was signed. He was on the practice field yesterday that we were able to watch. And, of course, Greg asked about him, and Dirk goes, I don't know what you're talking about. There's, you know, there's been no official announcement. And Greg started to say something. He goes, he called him, oh, Mr. Report It Before It's Official. Huh, gotcha, didn't I? I mean, really, really came down. Now, again, Dirk said it with a smile. But I'm also king of that, too, where I'm being a sarcastic asshole. Nah. But if you smile a little bit, it's not quite as bad. You know, Dirk,
you got to be careful what
Dirk
you ask for. Like, people wanted someone to be more honest and open and direct.
I still love him.
And he's being honest
and open. He can beat me up,
and
he can beat them up, too. No, listen.
Yeah.
Again, I watched the Lovie Smith press conference this week from Illinois and had flashbacks and almost hung myself. So, but anyway, I really did watch a Lovie Smith press conference. Don't ask me why. It's a long story.
That's
but anyway.
Bill Joel song.
I think a very bad one, too. Not one of his classics.
I agree.
Anyway.
It's no Uptown Girl.
No. go ahead with your own life. Anyway, so let me just finish this up and wrap it up, then you guys can talk some more. You know, I think the defense – Mike Smith, I will say this, yesterday, very open air up front. You know, we screwed up. I screwed up. We made a lot of mistakes. Dirk said, we put our defense in bad position, and he did. At one point, I tweeted out the Buccaneers in the second half had a possession that was 1 minute and 11 seconds. It was the one where Jameis was sacked, then he had two incompletions. This is after the defense had just given up a pretty long drive.
Was that the one with the two drops in it?
No,
okay, that was later.
I think these were two bad throws, two bad Jameis throws, and he did not. I mean, you say looking back at it, maybe it's not as bad, and I haven't been able to bring myself to watch it again. I will. But I asked Jameis this. I asked Jameis yesterday. I said, because Jameis a couple weeks ago stood at the podium. We all heard him say, I got to protect the football. I got to protect the football. Mm-hmm. He said it 11 times in his 8-minute press conference. Now, I understand that's being drilled in. He understands turnovers are hurt your team. But there are some guys that are going to turn the ball over to a degree. You can't rein in certain guys because it changes their entire personality and also what they do well on a football field. Again, I'm not saying Dirk is doing that. I'm not saying Jameis is. But I thought it was a fair question to ask Jameis. He said no. Again, though, he says, because my number one responsibility is to protect the football. I would like to say no. Your number one responsibility is to score touchdowns. If you protect the football in doing that, that's okay. But don't limit your ability to score touchdowns because you're worried about throwing interceptions or having turnovers. That's just my two cents on that part.
I don't disagree. And this is going to be part of the dance that Coach Cutter and Jameis have to do. They have to be able to figure out what that happy medium is between letting him sling the ball around and having him be wary of turning the ball over. There were opportunities on the field, and I want to make sure that I clarify. When I say it wasn't as bad, I mean, it wasn't as bad as it sounded from Twitter after the game. Yeah. It was still not a good game.
There were people saying they made terrible mistakes.
Jameis is a bust.
Mistake.
He's terrible.
Right. I will say this on the two on the I guess it was the first opportunity in overtime when they had the ball on the 42-yard line after the Janikowski miss, and that was the opportunity to go win the football game.
Yep.
Because they had the ball first in overtime. They didn't score. So the next team that scores wins, right? They get the 3 points. That's all they need. Game over. They need about 35 yards to give Aguayo a 1 in a 33% chance of making it. But that's all they needed.
They went deep on that first attempt.
And I like what Dirk did there. He said he kind of set that up for the game on a double move. The problem was Mike Evans, while he wasn't on the field 93 snaps, he was gassed. He said it after the game. I wasn't in good enough condition. I got to make a play on that ball. I've got to do better.
That ball was underthrown anyway.
Yeah, and it did hang up in the wind a little bit. There was a little bit of wind there. And although, if you look at that one, that's one where a flag could have been thrown as well. There were two guys back there, right? One guy kind of armed around him a little bit. But anyway, it doesn't matter. I'm not talking about the one down the sideline that Mike should have absolutely laid out for. Why is Mike Evans yet to lay out for a ball? You remember the one?
I do.
I think it might have been the first half or
early. It's a perennial question for receivers, right? You know. Typically, if you jump, you're beat, right? You're not going to get it. You're taught to run it out. There are times, though, that good receivers, I forgot the receiver from another team that did one that was on every highlight reel ever, you got to lay out for the ball every once in a while. You know that I was a big basher of Mike Evans in the drops last year. I've been super impressed with Mike Evans this year. He had a couple drops yesterday that I thought sucked. Three, I think.
In practice?
What?
You said yesterday.
I'm sorry, in this game. I apologize. There was one in particular. When I went back and watched the coach's film, the play calling wasn't nearly as bad as it felt real time. There were some guys open. And I know a lot of people in the chat room have said, and by the way, Skip, I want to talk about the timid thing because that's where I'm getting at in here. Skip Brown in the chat room said that James looks timid. He's got to make his reads faster. He's fallen back into that college tendency of all quarterbacks to see someone open before you release the ball, and I think that's because he's afraid of turnovers.
That's exactly what
when he makes his pre-snap read, there was a play early in the game, 12:57 in the first. He has Cecil Shorts cutting on a deep post with no safety help, about 6 miles of open grass in front of him. Now there was pressure, and it was a play that would have gotten called back because he ended up scrambling on the ball on the play and getting a call back because Donovan Smith got just pimp slapped on the end. But he has to see that play before it's there because he could have thrown that ball before the hold even occurred, right? And there was one where Mike Evans, they set up a double stack, and Mike broke to the out. It was open. He overthrew it a little bit, but it's one that Mike catches 99 times out of 100, and Mike dropped it. You look at some of those plays, and you're like, crap, there were a lot of plays on the field
there
that could have been made.
Missed opportunities, and I'm going to go back to what I was going to say as far as that first possession in overtime. The deep ball, then Jameis had two opportunities, and on both of those, particularly the one that was that out to Mike Evans, that would have picked up 6 or 7 yards, but it would have made it 3rd and 3 and supposed to 3rd and 10. He threw that ball so far to the outside.
Yeah, he could be caught.
Again, feeling, and this is my opinion, strictly my opinion. Again, going back to what Skip is saying a little bit, what I've thought about, not wanting to make a mistake. Because if you throw the ball and you make a mistake a little bit to the inside, it's 6 going the other way and the game is over. But that pass right there, to me, made me think to myself, Jameis Winston is trying to err too much on the side of caution because he's afraid of making mistakes and throwing interceptions. The next ball was a ball that Mike would say he probably should have caught as well, but it was a little high, kind of a ball that sailed on Jameis, which we've seen a lot of. But again, I think if that's first quarter, second quarter, Mike's not so tired, he probably makes that catch. But bottom line is Jameis wasn't great, and this is the second opportunity where he, where he had the chance to be that fourth quarter hero. Now, somebody pointed out on Twitter, makes perfect sense. Look, if Jude Ajay-Barima does not commit a hold on the completely opposite
game's
end of
over.
The field, then Jameis actually led him on a fourth quarter comeback, and that chalks him up. So the stat line on Monday Night Football 10 years from now said Jameis Winston has 37 fourth quarter comebacks. Now it's going to say 36 because of that hold, which is so frustrating to everybody involved because Derek Carr never even was going to consider looking that way. He was going to Crabtree from the time the ball reached his hand, dropped back, or maybe it was in the shotgun. And how he made such a bad throw, I don't know. And then Crabtree's feet got
kind of
tangled
up. Was it a hold? I didn't go back. Was a hold?
I mean, it was illegal contact or holding. He's got his hands on the guy.
Hugged him.
And you know, there was no need to. There were, if you look back at it, I believe there were two other guys in the area too, defenders. So It was such an unnecessary mistake. And again, things that you know the coaches preach to these guys, guys, it's fourth down. We can win the game here. Don't hold. They score touchdowns. They beat you. You get beat. We can live with that. But don't self-inflict and shoot yourself in the foot. And that's exactly what they did. But again, this narrative that this second hour is going to talk about, if he doesn't make that penalty,
the
or
entire
if there's
thing
a few
is
other,
different.
The whole narrative, the whole
we're
week.
We're talking about beat Atlanta. You're 5-3, 3-0 in the division, and it's Super Bowl time. Book your tickets.
Now, and I'll say this, and people tell me I talk too much. Well, I'll let you guys go after this.
No, you're doing good. Chris needs to talk more.
But there was another opportunity. No. I was talking about going back to Mike Smith. You know, Mike has been around this game a long time, and he is a realist. He's not sour or depressed about what happened. Now, again, the Raiders have been around for 150 years. I think they used to be the Acme Packers, if I'm not mistaken. No, that was the Green Bay Packers. But
and Wiley Coyote used to play them.
They've
right?
had a lot of good quarterbacks, right? Stabler, LaMonica, let's go to Rich Gannon,
Marina
Derek Carr.
Jim Plunkett.
Plunkett.
The mighty Plunkett.
Plunkett, I mean, the fact is that this defense gave up the most yards in Oakland history, over 600
Russell.
Yards. I mean...
I actually saw that.
Bad.
I saw that in the standings.
But.
Oh wait, no, I didn't.
But what Mike said is, it's one game, guys. And you know, last week we held Colin Kaepernick under 140 yards passing, and everybody was saying how great we are. Next week it's going to happen. It could happen again. We hope it doesn't. But you know, I do like Mike as kind of a calming influence, and you could tell he came into that press conference set up with what he was going to say, and he was very firm in what he said. But again, no pass rush. Your guys are gonna look bad. I love Vernon. I thought Vernon was having a really good year. I thought he took a bit of a step back last game. I thought Brent Grimes was not good. And the tackling, look, if you're going to let guys make catches in front of you, you can live with that. If that's the philosophy, if that's what the game plan was, keep everything in front. But you gotta make the tackling in this game was the worst I've seen in any
oh,
of the
man,
games
I
this
don't
year.
Think so. Watching it, I don't think that's true at all. I think if you go back and watch it again, you'll be surprised. There were certainly some key ones that were missed, but there were some that there's no way. The Connie one that you're thinking of on the game-saving tackle or a touchdown-saving tackle, he's in open field with Cooper, and Cooper could have picked him up and thrown him into the 10th row, and somehow Connie makes a tackle, right? And Grimes had a big tackle out on the flat.
No, there were some great moments. I mean, Lavonte David, the best
Lavonte
play of the
David,
day he
absolutely.
Had on that screen, fighting
Bradley
through
McDougal
that block.
On a screen,
right.
Just blast the guy. So, and your point is still a good one. I'm not being a jerk.
I guess because there were 93 offensive snaps for the Raiders,
the number of
missed tackles stands out a little bit more.
We had a game and a half of defensive snaps. And
worst possible scenario for a Thursday night game, too. Gosh darn it, lose the game in the fourth quarter and save your body. You know what I mean? Now this is going to make it even more difficult for this team to recover. Good news is they're not the team traveling. Atlanta is, but Atlanta didn't play 19 quarters on Sunday.
A pin in the second hour for the discussion about people taking issue with Gerald McCoy talking about having to go get into the cold tub and not go have a dinner, speaking to that being him whining and being more interested in body preservation.
Oh.
They really... That's a pin we're going to talk about in the second hour. So if you guys are in that camp, make sure you bring your deep boots.
Now, I'm probably going to bail because I don't want to get in trouble, but I've got a guy that's going to fill in for me. His name is Narc Mook.
Oh, I know that guy.
Do you know that guy?
I do. I know
okay,
Narc Mook.
Just to let you know, yeah. Narc Mook is going to fill in for me.
There was an article.
Because I'm going to be driving home during that hour.
Absolutely.
What's the game? What's the score on the?
The Cubs are winning. I hear.
I know.
What is it? Baseball.
It was.
I'm hoping for Joe Madden. I really am because this town did to Joe Madden what it does to so many people. So I'm really hoping for Joe Madden because I listened to people say it was time for him to go, just like they did for Dungy. It was awesome.
Yeah.
I hope he goes and wins a championship. It's 4-1 Cubs. Good. And Spent. I love you, and I know you're an Indians fan because you're from Cleveland. You have a legit reason. I'm simply a fan of Joe Madden when he was here. I like what he did.
Look,
I like
you guys won the NBA. Screw it.
What?
Ironically, they were down. They were down 3-1, and lost, and potentially
it's top of the fifth.
Baseball team's going to do the opposite.
Top of the fifth.
You mentioned
be up 3-1 and lose.
You mentioned the narrative, Mark, about what the talk has been this week with the defense and how they played. But with 3 minutes left in that game, they're up 7 points. Right? I mean, it's the defense up to that point against the Raiders, which had this high-powered offense coming in. We heard about it. One of the best offensive line in the league are held to 17 points with 3 minutes left in the fourth quarter. So
one out of six third down conversions for the Raiders in the first half. 6 out of 12 in the second half. And part of that was, you know, the third quarter and things like that. It was,
you could definitely tell the defense was getting gassed. Absolutely. Their offense is not staying on the field.
Right.
And I think, you know, there are certain plays and certain plays can be made. You mentioned the Jude pick and you talked about Brent Grimes. This is what I'd mentioned in the Storify. You go back and watch the coach's film. This Brent Grimes is in perfect position to pick off the pass that went to Crabtree.
Sometimes his jump wrong. What happened?
That's when he got shoved.
He got shoved in the back two hands by Crabtree to force or to stop the interception. And there was.
Are you talking about the one that he got the PI on?
No.
Oh, okay. All right. That's
one. No, the one that we should have got an offensive PI and didn't.
Yes. No, I agree on that.
So it goes back to that. But if you look at the game's over at that point, we pick off the ball. There's 2 minutes plus or 3 minutes, whatever it is. That's it. They run. I think the Raiders had two timeouts of that. You would expect getting the ball at like the 35-yard line that it's over. But this, and again,
I don't know. The Raiders almost won the game in regulation when the Bucs had the ball first and 10 with a minute 38 left.
That's true.
I mean, three and outs in the last three drives. I mean, and just terrible execution all the way around.
Even on guys like Luke Stocker, who on the first down of that first possession is set to block outside edge, Anton Smith. And you said Antone, and that's the correct pronunciation, right? It's Antone.
I can't remember. I'll ask him.
Ask him again, because someone, I think Anton. Greg tweeted out whether it's Dawn, like Dawn phonetically, or Tone. At any rate.
I think it's Anton.
Let's go A.
What
Smith.
What did Greg say?
I don't remember.
Okay.
I remember him tweeting it, and he put the phonetics in, and then I tuned out.
You know what? I can look it up on the Buccaneers media website.
Okay, great. So that play is designed to bounce to that right-hand side with Stocker, you know, setting the edge.
Right.
Stocker was out knitting a sweater, and you guys know I am the largest Stocker
fan
in the universe.
Too, sure.
And I'm like, Jesus Christ, block somebody. You can't be gassed. What did you have, 18 snaps?
Right.
So it was very. It's Anton, according to Pinnacle, with the phonetics. Thank you, Pinnacle. Assuming you got that from somewhere other than Twitter. No, I'm just kidding. That's not fair. All right, let's talk. Let's wrap up the Raiders discussion so that we can talk a little bit about the Falcons. We can get our predictive MVPs, all those sorts of things. I think we've hammered this pretty aggressively.
I was close on my score, right? I had the wrong team. What I have 30-27.
I will tell you what you had. You had 31-27 Bucks.
All right.
Mark had 27-21 Raiders, and I had 34-27 Bucks. We all had spreads pretty close. We all picked really crappy answers for the predictive MVPs.
Who do we have? I can't remember.
Vernon didn't get it for me.
Evans with 51 yards or whatever, though. There were a couple catches that were ridiculous. I had Jacquizz Rodgers, who got hurt. He played well until then, so mine was the best one. That's not true. They all sucked.
Yeah.
Then G-Mac, who I thought had a decent game but didn't show up on the stat line because that's the only thing people look at. Because they don't go back and watch the film. We already talked about that. 5-1 to Cubs now, by the way. Pinnacle says he got it from Mr. Smith via Greg Allman, Anton Smith. Vernon Hargraves was your pick, Chris, and Brent Grimes was my pick. And the PI where he's going for the interception, I was kind of shocked by. I don't know. They were bad picks. It wasn't a great game. But in watching it the second time, especially the first half, I watched that first half again. I was like, this was not as bad a game as my heart is telling me it was. And I watched overtime, and I wanted to weep. We had many opportunities. And even the play that won the game, 4th and 4, out of field goal range, the defense has kept them out of field goal range despite the fact that they can't even see. Smith dialed up pressure, right? He overloaded the side. Carr was able to slide to the left, deliver a ball on a strike, and it was just a wrap. I mean, at that point, they had the first down. They were on the 20-yard line. The chance of Seabass missing yet another field goal was unlikely, though, you know, possible, I guess.
Automatic from inside 50. The only ones he's missed this year have been 50 plus. And he's kicked eight attempts or something. Leads the league. It's crazy.
I was surprised they didn't go for the field goal at 4th and 4 on the 50 or whatever the hell they were on, to be honest. But, you know, it is what it is.
Real quick about this game, because I know last week we talked a lot about going to games, and that was the big talk last week. Not showing up for games. I was really shocked by how upset folks were at the end of this game. I understand you don't like the result, but that was, I can't remember the last time that a Bucs game had me on the edge of my seat like this last game.
All the way to the end.
I mean, it was awesome. I saw the Periscope and you firing back and forth with the Raiders fans, and everyone was into the game the entire time. It seemed like one of the best game experiences to be at.
It was phenomenal.
That's why I wasn't upset.
How was the crowd? No, I mean, again, I hate the press. No, I don't. It's free food and air conditioning. But I do hate the press box experience.
It's isolating.
You can't tell how loud, you know, things
are. I thought
the
crowd did well. The folks in the chat room, let us know how it sounded on TV, because I watched the coach film, so I don't hear the audio even on the second watch. It felt like the crowd did a good job. Now, you could visually see all the black jerseys in the lower level. They were there. And listen, we were invaded by hundreds of the Raiders fans. Our tailgate was ridiculous if you watched the Periscope. And it was great. They were respectful fans, passionate fans. But they didn't have anything to cheer for the better part of three quarters, right? Then they started making some noise, but the Bucs fans stood up and did a good job. I thought that in general, from a fan response, it was pretty damn good. Were there empty seats? Yes. Let me dime you out on a couple things about Raymond James Stadium. Those end zones are full of about 10,000 people drinking beer and hanging out.
Yep.
You will not see the stands full all the time in Raymond James.
Right.
It just won't be. And if you look at the end zone view, especially towards the, which way is that? South. This is west. So that is the south end zone. Especially that, because the whole front sections are players' areas for kids, and the kids don't stay and watch the games.
Yeah. And the club level, again, particularly when the third quarter starts, is very sparse. People are going in.
Especially East Club, which is where most of the vantage point is, because that's where the sun's hitting.
So, I mean, you know, they're inside and watching the game on the big TVs and sitting on leather couches and drinking drinks inside. So that's a bad thing about the whole club level. I mean, I say it's a bad thing. I don't really care either way. But from the appearance-wise, you know, you miss a lot of fans because a lot of, you know, there's nobody at the game. Well, that's not true. A lot of them are, inside.
I would love to get data on the through the turnstile data from all teams to see what that's like. Because I sit in club. Mm-hmm. I almost never leave my seat. I go if I have to pee, and I get a refill on the Coke. Other than that...
What? You told me you were going to start doing adult diapers this year.
No, I actually was going to pee on the guy next to me, but he wasn't there this week, so it wasn't even fun.
All right.
But in general, I thought even clubs stood up this week, which was astonishing, because typically they don't, but they were pulled into it as well. So, and I know there's a lot of Twitter backlash on, hey, Dirk, we'll go to the stands if you give us a winning team. And again, I'm going to put a pin in this one because that's dumb. Right, you can't get mad at your coach asking for hometown support. You can't hold him accountable for the 3 years. And by the way, shout out to Peter Plank. Was it Peter Plank? No, it was Nick Hulis. Where's Hulis from?
Buck Stop.
Anyway, Nick wrote an interesting article about the home streak loss and how many games we've lost and which coaches it was under and how holding this regime and in many cases these players responsible for it is not necessarily fair. He understands that it's weight. But you can't hold them accountable for the 2-14 and the crap in the past. But
are there been three home games this year? Correct. Rams, Denver, and this past one. Am I missing one? That's it, right? So far,
you're missing the Browns in preseason. Game. I'm just kidding.
Okay, so
no, there. Yeah, that, I think there has only
the Rams game was exciting. Came down to the wire, right? And then we had the weather delays and things. Broncos, okay, different story.
Terrible.
And this game. So two out of the three games you look at are probably some of the most entertaining football that the Bucs have played at home in how many years? Not getting, you know, it's not 35-0 Baltimore in the second
quarter.
Yeah,
but Chris, wait till this week where they get run out of the building because they're a terrible football team. None of their guys should be playing on an NFL team. We have nothing but backup guys. Our depth is terrible, and our quarterback's a bust, and our coach is dumb, and our colors are ugly.
Gerald's on
the They are going to be kind of weird tomorrow.
Well, you got the John Lynch thing going on.
Yeah, so. The Ring of Honor, and we'll have 23,000 people in the stadium.
And it's the Sunday night.
Oh, we're going to be a nice crowd tomorrow night.
It's those the night Sunday
games,
night.
Those night games Wanna are going to be good. Yeah.
What's your count? How many things are going to be in there?
Oh, are we going to say tickets sold, or are we going to do Greg Allman's TSA turnstile?
Let's do the turnstile number.
47.
I'm going to say 54.
Yeah, I got 47.
It's let's do an over under. Let's split the difference.
Okay.
So 47 to 54, carry your three. So 50 and a half. So 55.
Okay.
50,500. I'm gonna go under. You're gonna go over.
Mm-hmm.
You're gonna go under.
Yeah.
All right.
And whoever
could you
loses,
make any more noise with that candy? Seriously, what the hell are you doing?
Shots. Atlanta doesn't travel, so that I don't think they travel.
Yeah. The campaign in club was buy a parking pass and you get two free club tickets for anyone keeping track.
$25, right? Are they doing club tickets for that?
Yeah. Two club tickets to give you an idea of how poorly attended this game is going to be.
I'll get on that.
Well, maybe they should give away some more Jameis Winston
action figures.
Action figures.
All right. And by the way, Pinnacle Atlanta doesn't travel. Their fans never travel. The ones who do travel are even, like, our friends in the PFUFA are great, and we're looking forward to seeing Lamar and those guys, but their fans do not historically travel. The Atlanta fans you see here are typically Atlanta transplants. And if you guys ever have questions about which fans travel, let us know, because we get a chance to see a lot of that. And I'll tell you what, the damn Raiders fans traveled. And that Jacksonville swing, they loved it. They loved it. The players may not have liked it, but the fans loved it because they made a week vacation out of it. All right, let's do predictive MVPs for this week. I'm going to go to Chris first. Who is your predictive MVP on offense and defense, sir?
Okay, offense, we're going to stay with Mike Evans because it's just the easiest thing to say. I'm not trusting the running game this week. I think James is going to throw a ton of passes this week. I got to go with the best receiver, Mike Evans.
Mark.
And Jameis, he's going to have a big game.
I like that pick.
Listen, Atlanta plays a ton of zone. Yep. Jameis plays much better in zone. These receivers are more equipped to get open in zone, the Adam Humphreys and the Cecil Shorts of the world. There's going to be checkdowns available. Dirk points that all the time. Look, when teams are playing man, you know, people are like, why didn't you use a checkdown? There are no checkdowns in man coverage. I mean, not like there are when you have zone coverage. So, bottom line is, I think Jameis has a big game. I picked him to win. I was the only one of the Pewter Report staff to pick him to win, and I'm still going to pick him to win. But I think Jameis is going to have a nice game.
All right. Defensively, Mr. Fisher.
Going to me again. I'm going to go with one of the linebackers this week, and let's say Quan will have a rebound week. Had a big game last season against Atlanta. How did he play? Pretty well the first game, right, against Atlanta?
He is 2-1 against Atlanta. He's had like 28 tackles. Yeah. Someone put up the stats on Quan versus Atlanta. He's played him three times.
It was 3-0.
Yeah, 3-0.
The stat sheet said 2-1, I thought. But
yeah, they beat him both times last year and then this year. Yeah.
The other stats are even more gross. Okay. Right? He apparently has been a Falcon killer.
Yeah.
I think Freeman's going to get the ball a ton out of the backfield, so I'm going Quan in this game.
Going Quan.
Yep.
I'm going defensively. I'm going to go with my man Ayers. I think he has a rebound game. I see rebound game. Didn't do a whole lot last week against Donald Penn, but I think he's going to have a impact this week.
I am also going with Quan. Jameis and Quan are my picks. I think Quan is the Falcon killer. I also think Quan, and I don't know if this is still true, and Mark, maybe you can find this out in the next week betwixt this show and our next show. If he's still the guy getting in early, like we hear Jameis when mm-hmm. Coach Cutter says that, you know, he gets there and he's there an hour before him,
he
whatever.
Is.
If Quan's still in there, he watched this film and he is pissed mm-hmm. because I was watching it and pissed because he's such a talented player. And when he was in the right position, he made the plays. But he was taking himself out of so many plays that it was brutal. It was absolutely brutal.
And he was really, really upset after the game. I mean, most of the guys were, but Quan was even more. I'm just going to try and find this quote real quick.
That's fine. Chris, give me the prediction you have for the game.
As much as I think this can be a close game, I don't think it's going to be, and I think it's just because with the amount of the short, quick going into overtime and having to come back and play on a Thursday night, more injuries. I don't like Shep being down and losing Jacquizz Hurts as well. So, and McDonald on the defensive line. I'm going 27-6. Falcons missed extra point by Aguayo. Not two field goals. Sorry.
Ouch. That is a brutal prediction of pain. For a Thursday night game on prime time.
I think it's going to be close for a while.
Well, if you're saying the Bucs are only going to score six and it's going to be close for a while, what are you saying? It's going to be like a 10 or 13-6
game or something for a while.
Yeah, Atlanta's going to score the shit
out of
the ball. It's not
going to be 13-7 and end up 27-6.
They're going to
take points off the board.
I'm not doing the math.
Jesus
in my head.
Christ.
Whatever.
Fisher, have you been drinking?
Gosh. Whatever. No. BYOB, CE, whatever you're.
What's your prediction? You said you predicted the Bucs to win, as did I, not surprisingly to any of our fans or listeners out there.
I'm going like 34-28, something along those lines. I can't remember exactly what I predicted on Pewter Report. Yeah, there's gonna be a lot of scoring. Listen, the Falcons defense isn't great.
Did you watch their game against the Packers? I heard Clay went off.
I don't know.
I heard Claiborne went off.
Claiborne and Beasley both had very good games in that. And But at the same time, they're also 27th in the league in pass defense, and so I think Jameis is going to have an opportunity to throw the ball some, and they're going to score some points.
Pinnacle just said that we lose a point because Aguayo kicked a negative field goal. I don't know what field goal is, but I like it. I'm predicting a 27-17 Bucks victory. Listen, the gut check thing, and it's going to happen. It's got to happen. I thought it was going to be against Oakland, and I thought it was close. At this point, I periscoped about it before the game. The team has got to go from hoping to win to thinking they can win to believing they can win to expecting to win. That is the continuum that you have to go through. And, you know, tough times drive this sort of action. You've got to face this kind of adversity in order to get there. And it'll determine a guy like Jameis whether he's going to be seen as a leader or whether he's going to be seen as a bust. Now, I don't think he has earned a bust title by any stretch, despite what some folks out there have said on Twitter. But this is the kind of game against a primarily zone team that he can go out there, and then we can have the strange mercurial flip-flop of he's a bust, and now he should be in the Pro Bowl.
Right.
Right. So, all right, I want to thank you guys for joining Hour 1. We will end this program with no fanfare whatsoever, and then we will start up a new one which will be a different tone. Make sure you have your stuff together. 813-964-7364 after the brief opening. I've got notes on the things you guys talked about. What do you mean no audio? You've got audio, man. Audio is running fine. I can see it on my side. But we'll be right back with that second show in about 3 minutes. So use the bathroom, get some drinks, and we'll be back talking a little bit more Heat. Take care.